Right into that. Okay. I'm going to call to order the December 10th meeting of the DC Bar's Board of Governors, which starts with the President's Report, which is my report. So again, thank you all for being here. So many of you in person, it's great to see you. Just a few items I'm going to run through. Interestingly, I'm approaching halfway through my term. People come up and say, well, how's it going? And I say, well, it's halfway over. And I was like, wow, it's hard to believe. I feel like I was just getting sworn in recently. So what happens, Sabina? It goes by quick. A few items. Number one, for those of you who've been at events with either Chief Judge Lee or Chief Judge Anna Blackburn Rigsby, you have heard them talk quite a bit about the vacancies on the Superior Court and the Court of Appeals. We have done what we can to help with that, which as of a couple of weeks ago includes a letter that Charles and Sedina and I sent to the four Senate leaders who oversee the DC judge confirmation process. It's a little bit different from the other judges that you might hear about. So we sent a letter to Senator Schumer, McConnell, and Gary Peters and Rand Paul, because they are the chair and ranking member of the Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee. Our judges do not go through the Judiciary Committee. They go through a separate committee. So we wrote a letter on behalf of the bar encouraging them to prioritize our judges for confirmation, since we do have so many vacancies and it is having an impact, unfortunately, on the court. So that letter went out. Thank you, Rhonda, for getting that sent to the senator's offices. That's not always easy to do, as it turns out. But in October, there were two very interesting trips that I took. Number one was to London. I represented the DC Bar. We were invited to participate in the opening of the law year with the Law Society of England and Wales. So I was there representing the DC Bar. I was joined by the presidents of the ABA and the bars of New York, Florida, Texas, and California. And it was a really great opportunity and quite an honor to be invited to participate. We actually had lunch with the president of the Law Society. As I told Bob, he gets a house and a salary for the year. Bob said I could live in the building, but that's not, doesn't quite count. But just a great opportunity to meet with bar leaders from around the world, not just London. People came, there was a panel and members from China, or Malaysia, Mexico, France, Kenya, just all over the world, talking about really interesting topics. So it's great that they have invited us now, and that will continue. So they see the DC Bar not only as a national leader here in the US, but one worldwide as well. So really fascinating opportunity. In October also, Bob and I went to our first meeting of the Southern Conference of Bar Presidents, which you probably heard us talk about. We are now a member of. We have been a member of the Mid-Atlantic Conference of Bar Presidents. We are now a member of Southern, which is great because Mid-Atlantic, they're wonderful people and wonderful bars, but we are the only mandatory bar in that conference. So a little bit of different discussion with them. In the Southern Conference, many of them are mandatory bars. So it's a really great group to be involved with. And we met in Jackson, Mississippi, and we'll map out the future meetings with them going forward. So, and it's a larger conference as well, much larger. Many of you have seen the emails about the Judicial and Bar Conference that is being planned for April of next year. We host this every other year with the court. The theme is approved. It is going to be the future of the profession, shaping the next generation of legal practice. I co-chair the committee overseeing it with Judge Vijay Shankar of the Court of Appeals. Judge J.P. Howard is still very involved. He chaired it 2 years ago. And of course, Chief Judge Blackburn Rigsby helps oversee it as well. The first half of the day is really the responsibility of the court to put on, and they're in very good shape, wrapping up the compilation of their panel and their topics. And then the bar is responsible for the afternoon sessions. And so we just received the proposals from members. We had our call for proposals on what they wanted to talk about. All of the acceptances went out for those. So the afternoon's looking to be in very good shape. Want to thank Adriana and Darren for their leadership and going through all that and helping support the court and the bar in that effort. But it's coming together very nicely. If you haven't seen the material, keep an eye out for the emails, and it'd be great if you could attend and participate in the Judicial and Bar Conference. Moving on, voluntary bar leadership group. We had our most recent meeting a couple weeks ago, I think it was. And some of us stayed afterwards to look at the structure and the cadence and the operations of those meetings. We've been hosting them monthly for years now, and we alternate between in-person and virtual. We're going to be looking at scaling back the number of meetings that we host throughout the year to focus a little bit more on trying to get greater turnout at the meetings that we do have. So we may focus them and may host them quarterly going forward. So we're still putting together the map for that, but we want to make sure that they're meaningful for our voluntary bar leaders and that it works for their schedule. So thank you to those of you who've been able to attend those meetings. They're really fascinating. So if you do get a chance, please stop by. We have lunch. It's a great way to connect with voluntary bar leaders if you haven't met some of them and hear their feedback as well on what they're working on, because we are partners with them in representing the legal community in our city. Let's see. Oh, the DC Bar Ambassador. I know you've all been getting this by email. And again, would like to thank the staff. I know, Darren, thank you for your leadership in corralling everything you need to do to get it in there, because it is wide ranging in terms of the topics that are included. But I've been hearing positive feedback about it. It's a great way to promote and highlight some of the timely events and programs that the bar is working on, including volunteer opportunities. This is meant to be widely disseminated. So when you get it, please feel free to send it out to any of your networks and peers and whoever that you can. I posted it on LinkedIn and have gotten nearly 1,400 impressions from the one I posted. So people see it and they're looking at it. And the way it's set up now, it's a clickable link. So you can go to it and then you can click the links within it. So if you want to post it on your social media, please feel free to do so. You can email it out. But it is a nice way and a very concise way to send out a nice encapsulation of the work that we're doing here at the bar and encourage others to get involved and engaged. So thank you for that. And if you have any feedback about it, please let us know as well. We're always looking to improve it. Two more items. Just one reminder, when the staff send out a notice that we need to vote on something, to please kind of check that off really quickly and get your vote in on whatever those are so we can move those issues along. Sometimes they get lost in our email, but if you could pay attention to those and really make sure you vote on it, we would appreciate it. And then I know we have holds on the January calendar for a potential board meeting. It will no longer be potential. It will be. It is not a tentative meeting. And it is the meeting where I believe we will potentially discuss the DEI task force report and a report from the governance committee with a possible rule change. So please hold that on your calendar, because we will be having that. Any questions on anything I mentioned? If not, we can move along to the consent agenda. Any items that need to come off of that? If not, we can vote on it. All right. Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda, which includes the secretary's report and appointments to the Neighborhood Legal Services Program Board?
Motion.
Is there a second? All those in favor?
None.
Any opposition? Any abstentions? Thank you very much. Back to you, Mr. Salzberg, for the treasurer's report.
All right. This is on. I'm reporting on the financial results for the bar for the first 3 months of fiscal year 2025, which is the period ending in September of 2024. So let's go to the next slide, please. The bar ended the quarter with a slight deficit from operations of $58,000. This is better than what we budgeted by $623,000. Year to date, our revenue was $10.5 million, which was below budget by less than 1%. Expenses were $10.6 million, which is below budget by 6%. Overall revenue is less than budget by $58,000, which is less than 1% of what was budgeted. Higher than budget results for license fee revenue for more reinstatement and late fees than we expected was offset by lower budgeted credit card surcharges in other fees and services revenue. Expense savings occurred in professional fees and IT license fees from timing, and in miscellaneous expense and equipment lease and services due to lower than budget building expenses to date. And the increase in net assets of $1 million is the result of the $58,000 deficit from operations and a net $36,000 in client security fund disbursements, all of which was offset by investment gains of $1.1 million. Let's go to the next slide, please. Licensed fee funded activities had a deficit of $181,000, which is better than we budgeted by $598,000. As mentioned earlier, we had higher than budgeted revenue and license fee, but this was offset by lower than budgeted credit card surcharge revenue. Expenses were less than budget, with savings in professional fees related to the timing of consultant fees. We also showed savings in building maintenance costs and miscellaneous expense and lower personnel costs due to vacancies. Next slide. For non-licensed fee-funded activities, communities had a deficit of $38,000 from operation, which was better than budgeted by $29,000. Communities' revenue overall was on budget, with lower communities' dues offset by a higher-than-budgeted sponsorship revenue. Communities also recognized expense savings from food and professional fees due to fewer in-person events. With regards to CLE, CLE had a deficit of $15,000 from operation, which was $2,000 better than budget. Revenue was better than budget by 20% due to passport sales reflected in admissions and registrations, which is $24,000 higher than budget. Expenses exceeded budget by $24,000 due to higher healthcare and salary-related costs, along with higher costs for credit card processing and other fees and services. And the consolidated CLE program, which includes the mandatory course and rules education, generated a surplus from operations of $7,000. With regards to the other non-licensed fee-funded activities, which includes certificates of good standing, royalties related to member benefit affinity programs, and the newly launched lawyer referral service, altogether they generated a surplus of $175,000 from operations, which is $5,000 lower than what we budgeted. My DC lawyer, the new benefit, which was launched this year, generated $25,000 during this period. So overall revenue from these other activities was less than expected by 5%, which was better than expected. With better than expected results in rental revenue for the studio and meeting rooms offset by a timing shortfall. Expenses were less than budget by 5%. Finally, the last slide. We had $121 million in total assets at the end of the quarter. Cash balance was $4.9 million, and the investment balance was $36.8 million at the end of September. Compared to last year, this time last year, our cash decreased by $16 million, and our investments increased by $21.2 million. As part of our investment strategy, we had moved cash that had been sitting in our operating account into higher-earning short-term investments to take advantage of the higher interest rate environment. All in, our cash investment portfolio has grown 14% over last year. The balance of the mortgage on the building, which comes due in August of 2037, was $48.1 million. And unless anyone has any questions, this concludes my report on the DC Bar's financial performance for the first quarter ending in September 2024.
Any questions? Hearing none, I will turn it over to Bob for the CEO's report.
All right. I just wanted to close out the report on license renewal. Our license renewal period is extraordinarily long. It goes from May 1st to September 30th. And at that point, those who have not paid their license fees get suspended. The amount that we had of license fees that we had received was about $34 million, which is better than last year by 5%. So we were doing overall better in recovering them. Still, 3% of our members got suspended because they didn't pay, which is not uncommon. That's about the number that we see on an annual basis. That amounted to 3,580 members. It will not surprise anybody to know that within a few weeks after that, half of them immediately paid their license fees and the reinstatement fee that comes along with it in order to get back in the door. So 52% of our members then, they got reinstated. So that was 1,846. So we still have about half, just less than half, who still need to come back into the fold. They all will eventually. It may take them a while before, but they'll get there. A couple of process reminders. Typically this time of year, you all will get emails, complaints, notices. You will get corralled in a networking event about how awful our suspension policy is and how they got, or their late fee policy, or whatever it happens to be. If a member emails you, or even a member of the public emails you with an issue, complaint, concern about the bar, it is possible, if not likely, that they are sending it to other board members, and there's no way to know to whom they've sent it. Sometimes it's just to the president or the president-elect. Sometimes it's to everybody. Sometimes it's to me. They should all go to ITM so that ITM can make a decision about who is the right staff member to respond. And also, if there's a legal issue involved, she can help ferret that out early in the process. We'll let the board know that we received the communication and then also share the response so that one person is basically taking care of it, and then that we don't have 23 people responding to an individual member, potentially with different responses. So it's helpful if everybody coordinates through, you know. Speaking of coordination, we get tons of requests to meet with members of foreign bars, foreign, but both domestic and other states, but foreign as in around the world. And we've had a really robust number of folks come in the door. Sometimes it's staff from other bars who want to meet with us about our operations, about the building, about how we manage things. Sometimes they want to talk to the volunteers about policy issues and governance issues and the rest. We recently got blindsided by a representative from another country who thought we thought we were here for one reason, but they were here for a completely different reason. And it was not a great use of anybody's time. So going forward, what we're going to do is when we're contacted by a member of one of these delegations, we'll ferret out what exactly they want to discuss. If it's a volunteer issue, we'll let the board know. And if anybody would like to join that discussion, they'll obviously be welcome to do so. If it's purely a staff issue, we won't bother you with it. We'll deal with it directly. Every once in a while, it's a combination. We had a delegation from the country of Georgia, their bar, recently, where they had the executive director, the equivalent of the executive director, as well as the volunteers, because they're working on a number of issues in building up the organized bar in the country of Georgia. And that was great, because then we had some volunteers and some staff. But going forward, we'll be fairly careful about how we use your time and our time going forward. We love having them come. We learn a lot. We're happy to share. We just want to make sure it's being done for the right reasons and not to write off a business expense, which is what happened a couple of weeks ago. The nominations committee is active. The call for nominations went out a couple of weeks ago, and we're already getting folks coming in. I would encourage you all to remember that as members of the board, you are ambassadors of the DC Bar and the Pro Bono Center, and to encourage those folks who you think would be good leaders of the bar to run for the Board of Governors, for the President-elect, for the Treasurer-elect, as well as delegates to the ABA. The nominations committee has to work a little bit faster this year because the slate is due mid-February as opposed to March, because we want to have an extended elections period, a few more weeks of voting. So you'll be seeing repeated reminders about the call for nominations. So again, you are the best. You know the bar the best. Please reach out to your networks. Going back to foreign visitors, we were a foreign visitor. Katerina Lupi, our chief information officer, attended the ILACE conference in Victoria Falls, Zimbabwe, on behalf of the DC Bar. I was supposed to go, but I had a family issue, and so I wasn't able to do it. But ILACE is a horrible name for a really wonderful organization. It's the International Institute of Law Association Chief Executives. So it's all bar nerds like me from around the world who we meet. So all the executive directors, CEOs, the secretaries general, we meet once a year. We have other stuff during the year, but we have one in-person meeting to talk about what's going on worldwide. And it's utterly fascinating to see how we match up in many ways similar to, in other ways very different from, bars around the world. The reason that Katerina was there is because of the focus of a big part of this conference was AI and what bar associations around the world can be doing with AI in order to support their members. And our lawyer referral service was featured front and center. So Katerina went there to explain how it operates, what we do, how it works, see the guardrails that are in place and the rest. It was the hit of the conference, I have to say. I participated virtually, but it was terrific. She did a fabulous job. So thank you, Katerina, for your work. She's online right now. Finally, it has been decided that the next CLE abroad trip will be in October, and it will be to Ireland. So, Darren, what are the dates again?
October 16th to the 22nd.
So we would love to have as many of you attend as possible. You have plenty of notice. I know it's a busy time of the year, but we would love to have you. Everyone who has gone to the other CLE abroad trips have found them to be wonderful, interesting, informative, and a great way to meet and bond with your fellow DC Bar members.
There'll be an article about previous CLE abroad trips coming out in the January-February issue of Washington Lawyer. So you can read all about all the great, great folks that we met overseas.
It does really give you access to places, institutions, leaders that you might not, if you're just visiting Ireland, you're not going to have a chance to meet, because they do a fabulous job of getting to see the chief judge of this and the head of the parliament that and the lord of this and, you know, all those kinds of things. All right. Any questions? All right.
Thank you very much, Bob. All right, let's move on to the report of the 2024 ABA annual meeting. And I saw Paul on the screen there. So Paul, welcome.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure as the state delegate for DC in the ABA House of Delegates to give you this report. It is a report about the August annual meeting, which means it's a little bit old news now, but we had some scheduling glitches. So here we are. The annual meeting, as you know, is the time when there's a passing of the gavel from one ABA president to another. A memorable part of this meeting was the passing of the gavel from Mary Smith, who many of you probably know is a kind of an honorary member of our delegation. She practiced law here for a while. She was the first Native American woman president of the American Bar Association. And she focused her year on protecting democracy, establishing a very high-profile commission on democracy, co-chaired by Judge Luttig and by former Homeland Security Secretary Johnson. The new president is Bill Bay from St. Louis. But the main work of the House of Delegates over the 2 days was a long series of resolutions. We were very busy in August. And so I thought I'd pull out some of the more interesting or significant resolutions. You couldn't possibly give you all of them, and you wouldn't want to hear about all of them. But here's some good ones. So the one area of focus was foreign policy, interestingly. One resolution that passed called for the international world to treat Taiwan as more fully a member in the international system and less of a province of China, more of an independent country. Two others called for the United States government to take steps addressing what were said to be genocides that are ongoing in Afghanistan and in Tibet. Leaving the area of foreign policy, one resolution opposed the mandatory posting of 10 commandments in public school classrooms, which I think is an ongoing proposal in Oklahoma. It also opposed authorizing religious chaplains in public schools, which seems to be another proposal out there these days. One resolution called for the repeal of the Comstock Act, which, as you probably know, is something that's viewed as a threat to medication abortions, being transmitted in the U.S. mails. Another called for increasing access to, in marginalized communities, to adequate prenatal and postnatal medical care. Yet another called for measures to alleviate the burden of medical debt that causes bankruptcies for so many. The labor and employment section called for a resolution and passed a resolution that opposed non-disclosure and non-disparagement agreements as a condition of employment, where you have to sign those agreements on the way into taking a job. It also opposes post-settlement agreements and pre-settlement agreements preventing disclosure of workplace harassment, discrimination, and other violations of law in the workplace. So the idea would be that employees can't be forced to stay silent about those things as part of a settlement. There was a resolution about transgender rights. It called for protection from harassment of transgender patients seeking gender-affirming care and for their medical providers as well. The law students division of the ABA had a couple of interesting resolutions I thought you'd like to hear about. One called for law students who are engaged in field placements to be able to be both paid for them and receive credit for them at the same time. These days, the field placement is either one or the other. Another one by the law students called for, this is interesting, I didn't know this was an issue, called for greater pay transparency from law firms in the on-campus interview process. So nobody was against transparency, so that passed. A resolution called for prohibiting the police from using deception or unauthorized promises of leniency to obtain incriminating information from children under the age of 18 in interrogation settings. And another one posed private prisons by urging government at all levels to avoid investing in corporations that earn more than 20% of their income from operating prisons. The Young Lawyers Division had one, which I'm sure you'll want to hear about. It was a resolution urging legal employers to adopt policies encouraging more bar association involvement by young lawyers, including by giving billable credit for the time spent in bar association activities, such as much like the credit that many law firms give for pro bono work. There was a resolution that put the American Bar Association on record as saying that the Equal Rights Amendment has been validly ratified and should be implemented. There's an ongoing fight, as I'm sure you know, that over whether enough states have ratified the Equal Rights Amendment or whether some old ratifications still count. And a particular interest perhaps to this organization, there was a resolution that called upon state bars to adopt policies accommodating the unique needs of military spouse attorneys who move frequently with their spouses from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. The delegates voted as well for to support the existence of a private right of action to enforce the Voting Rights Act. You wouldn't have thought that was controversial. It's been enforced by private actions for something like 45 years, but the Eighth Circuit recently held to the contrary, so that's important. Another resolution urged state and local government not to respond to homelessness by broadening criteria for civil commitment and viewing commitment as a solution to homelessness. There was a resolution urging bars to drop questions to incoming members involving disclosure of involvement in litigation in the past if the disclosure would make the person disclose that they were involved in fights as in the role as a victim of domestic violence, dating violence, sexual assault, sexual harassment, or stalking. So the idea was that people in their character and fitness interviews shouldn't have to disclose litigation in the past if it would put them, put those kinds of matters out in front of the bar examiners. Those are what I wanted to report. I'd be happy to answer any questions if anybody has it, or I also would encourage anybody to let me know if there are other ways I should be reporting back in this role since I'm fairly new at it, and see if this was a helpful one, but you can do that offline if you want as well. That's my report, Mr. President.
Thank you very much, Paul. Any questions for Paul? Well, I found that helpful, Paul, so my two cents, that's pretty much what I would hope for going forward.
That's what I need, then. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Paul. We appreciate your work on our behalf and the work with the ABA.
Well, I appreciate your work. I enjoyed serving on this board for about 6 or 8 years, as I recall. So keep up the good work.
Thanks so much. All right. We will move on to the annual report of the Communities Committee. And I don't have to look on the screen because Jim's in the room. Thanks for joining us in person, Jim.
Well, thanks for inviting. Is the mic on?
I don't know. It's not projecting if it is. Or just maybe
is
move
the mic
it.
On?
No. There's a switch on the top. Pull it toward you.
All right.
Can you hear me now? Good. So it's my pleasure to be here. The last time I was here, I was presenting on behalf of the DC Affairs community, which I had co-chaired for many years. This time, I'm reporting on behalf of the Communities Committee, which is and supervises all 23 communities of the bar. So it's quite a promotion. Thank you, Sean. And I hope I can serve you all well in that capacity. I'm joined by our Communities Director, Pamela Robinson, and Darren Sobel in the back, who's the Director of Programming, and by two of our members, who are Lila Baum and also Stephen Miller. So thank you all for having us. There's a report that's in your materials. We didn't have an opportunity to put it into a PowerPoint, and I'm going to go through some of the highlights in a minute. But first, I'm going to talk about what we're going to do this year. I wasn't the chair last year. We were served by a very able chair, Sherry Brown, and she stepped down. And this year, it's you got me. So our goals for this year are to increase membership in the communities and improve member engagement in line with the goals of our bar president. We also want to encourage public statements as a way to encourage members to get involved. And we know that as lawyers, we are going to have a lot to say next year. We also want to continue to update our policies and procedures, which is a task that we take every year. We're also continuing the practice of inviting leaders of different communities to our monthly meetings to hear what suggestions they have for improving our programs and services. And this time we're encouraging members of the community committee to attend steering committees and act as liaisons. Since that was a practice that used to be undertaken by the Board of Governors, we're stepping in and we're doing that this year. We actually have a reception tomorrow after our monthly meeting to network with community leaders, and everyone in this room, of course, is invited to join us tomorrow evening for that. We will be sending around a formal invitation after this meeting. We now have 23 communities. The newest are the early career lawyers, law students, and also a wellness community. And this year we have lots of student interns. We call them fellows, and every community that wanted one took one. We in the Communities Committee took two, and we intend to take them to lunch and then get them working pretty hard for us. We currently have a total of 15,375 members of communities, and we're not satisfied with that. We want to get back to our 18,000 member figure that we used to have. We also want to make a deliberate effort to reach out to the members of the bar to encourage them to get more actively involved in the community. So there's a dispute, I'm told, as to the number of bar members. I was told it was over 110,000. Then I was told it was 119,000. Well, anyway, we only have 15,000 involved in community. So something's wrong with that picture, and we want to try to correct that. So I'd like to turn now to this report that was prepared by bar staff. And if you take a look at it, it's for the last fiscal year. And we ended the last fiscal year with a surplus. So I'm sorry, Mr. Treasurer, but we ended up with money, not with a deficit.
We'll take it.
So during the last fiscal year, which ended June 30th, 2024, the community's office supported 137 programs and events. 13 additional programs were co-sponsored by communities with other bar entities or outside organizations. In addition, we had 42 podcasts, 32 newsletters. We prepared the DC practice manual, and we had lots of electronic discussions and lists that fostered engagement with colleagues. Our on-demand library expanded to include 200 products. Last year, our featured event was the 25th Annual Youth Law Fair, which I'm pleased to say the DC Affairs community started. That one was led by our immediate past president, Charles Lowry. And it was held at, there was a reception at bar headquarters featuring a lot of the members of the DC Affairs community who had been instrumental in creating that, including Karen Hardwick, Judge Mel Wright, and one of our DC past bar presidents, Miles Link. The 25th annual Lawfare was held under the supervision of the DC courts and is always a very well attended and very beneficial program. We also were supported not only by lawyers, but also by paralegal studies program and participants. The next Youth Lawfare, in case you're interested, it will be May 3rd. We also, another primary event sponsored this year was the DC Moot Court Competition, also started by the DC Affairs community. See, I make these little plugs here. we're going to have preliminary and semi-final rounds. Last year were held in February. We're going to do that again. And there were 6 law schools participating last year. They were all the local DC law schools. I think Georgetown won, in case you're interested, and Catholic was the runner-up. We are 27 bar members volunteered as judges, which is another way to get DC bar members actively engaged in DC bar activities. Our next round, and please volunteer to be judges if you can, is February 22nd and February 23rd, with the final round on February 28th. In addition, last year was the Early Career Lawyers Community inaugural year. We have 776 members in that community, which means that this is another tremendous opportunity for the bar to reach out to new people. We had a dialogue with DC Attorney General Brian Schwab, who's been very helpful, and he also attended a reception that the DC Affairs community threw last week. He's a very good representative for us. And then we also handled a joint program with the DC Superior Court on pro bono opportunities and networking, which had 50 people attending. Law student outreach has attracted 66 members. We have a judicial clerkship boot camp. We've reached out and continue to reach out for support to the area law school deans. Now, as far as our key accomplishments, another key accomplishment we should mention is the tax conference, which is handled annually and has grown in national importance because of our access to the IRS personnel who live in the DC area. Last year, we drew 400 individuals, another 160 online. We expect to draw over 1,000 this year. And that will be held first week of January. Our membership increased last year by 57%. We expect to do better this year. We've had 100 podcasts totaling, and we intend to do more this year. So all in all, we're kind of on the uptick. According to my notes that bar staff gave me, we ended up with a bar surplus of more than $286,000. I hope that doesn't disappear overnight. So if you have any questions, please let me know. I have Pamela here, and I have Darren in hiding in the back, who can answer any question that you care to ask. Well, Mark, Mr. Chairman.
Very quick question. On the podcast, is there a way, I'm assuming there's a way you can measure how many times it's been listened to? I'm curious, how popular is it? How many hits have we gotten?
I don't have that information with me, but I can follow up and get it to you.
Great.
I also just want to make a point about your report. Your report is for this year. That is correct. This report is for last year and is also correct. We have not bounced back from our high numbers from last year. We're working on it. Mm-hmm. Thus, the membership committee that Jim is putting together. But I just wanted to make sure that the numbers were correct.
Yes.
They are.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I will say that this bar has the capacity to reach thousands of people. We did the DC Affairs again, did a with the communities, did a debate for the attorney general candidates a couple of years ago, and we drew over 2,500 people on YouTube. So people want to hear what the DC bar is doing. We just have to figure out how to get our message out there.
Any other questions for Jim? Natalie?
So you said that the community's numbers are a little low. And is there a specific demographic or group that's more inclined to sign up for communities? Or how are you seeing that play out in terms of who signed up, who's more likely to sign up, you know, maybe people who need specific outreach, that sort of thing?
Darren, do you want to take that?
The early career lawyers community is a demographic we've never had before. And we had almost 700 sign up right away, like in its first year. And as I always tell Jim and Pam, the greatest way to attract new folks is to put on stellar programs that people can't get anywhere else. And so that's our main focus right now. That's what we're going to be doing. Plus, you know, our big push is always during license fee renewal, when we remind people of the community that they were in the previous year, and that gets added to their statement.
I'll just mention that one of the struggles that we continue to have is bouncing back from pre-pandemic attendance. Because, for example, we have this current fiscal year, we have well over 15,000 people who have signed up for communities. But the number of people who actually attend a program is a smaller percent of that. And so it's not just getting people back into the building, because everybody is like really rah-rah to be on Zoom during the first 3 years of the pandemic, but it's keeping up that interest and also getting people back in the building. I think there is a shift in how people participate in membership organizations, and we've got to figure out how to combat that shift. And we're not the only ones. It's across the board.
Oh, we're experiencing that in CLE as well when it comes to in-person attendance. But it's just, you know, it's just so much easier to sit at your desk and Zoom in for a webinar than it is to hop on Metro and come down, especially if it's raining. So we'll see. Dennis is still experimenting with different models in this post-pandemic world.
And I was also told that historically, this bar has not reached out to younger members of the bar because of some agreement they had with the other voluntary bar associations. But that's been worked out. And now this bar is reaching out to younger members, law students, or hiring fellows to assist the communities. So that's also another demographic that we're trying to reach out to.
And also, as ambassadors, remind people that you get the buy one, get as many as you want memberships and communities. So we implemented, I think, 2 years ago now, maybe three.
So,
not everybody understands that. So when they go to do their license renewal, they pick their one and they think that's it. But in fact, you know, you can pick multiple. So when you talk to people, please remind them of that. Any other questions for Jim? Layla?
Quick question. You don't have to answer it today. But I'm curious, assuming there is a surplus, is there like a hierarchy of where you would like to push, where you think it's most effective to put the money towards? Is it making the existing programs better or doing more outreach? I'd just be curious to know.
I think reserves are kind of earmarked, you know, as reserves. So if there's a surplus, then that is set aside, because the next year, like this year, we're going to have a shortfall.
Okay. So for now,
we're using that to kind of cover our shortfall for this year. And there probably will be a shortfall this year.
If there weren't,
I could think of a few things that I would do, but I don't want to speculate.
So if I could, I want, if let's remember this conversation in the January board meeting. Because the reason that we have this conversation is because we're not at the moment permitted to use license fee funds to support communities or CLE or pro bono. The governance committee is considering a rule change that may in fact change that or affect it or modify it in some way, which could shift to some extent the way that there's budgeting. Not that we still wouldn't charge for communities, we would, but it would allow license fees to back up some of their activities. But again, that's for January, assuming the governance committee considers and sends it on to you.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that, Jim. And I don't think there's any dispute. I use the number 119,000 members of the bar. So that's the number I've been using.
Yeah, except we just suspended 30.
They'll be back. I heard a CEO say they'll be back.
It's a constantly moving number, right? Because we have all the people who just passed the bar exam who are now, as soon as they get their stuff all done, will be admitted piece by piece by piece. We'll get 2,000 people coming in that way. In the meantime, we just offloaded 3,800, who may, all of whom will come back between now and, let's say, February, give or take. So in February, March, and April, we're going to look like 120,000 members. And then it's going to start. Then it's going to start to play again with the numbers. So we use that sort of spring, early summer high as who we are, because that is who we are. But we recognize, like every other mandatory bar, we are constantly in flux. But 119,000 is the number that we're using. But 85,000 of those are active, and that's, I think, the relevant number for community's purposes, because it's the active members who you are looking for really to join communities.
When you say active, what do you mean?
I mean, active as opposed to inactive, as a member class.
Okay.
It's their license category.
You know, they pay the higher dues.
They do pay higher dues.
Okay. Well, thanks, Jim. We appreciate it. Thank you, Pam.
My pleasure.
All right. We're going to move on to the annual report of the Lawyer Assistance Committee. Tara, are you on? Is she?
I'm here.
Okay.
I think my name.
There you are. Yes, I will.
Correct. I will.
No wonder I didn't see you.
Yeah. I work. It's my work name.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. Do you want me to just kind of launch in?
Yes. Yes, please.
Okay. Well, I'm very happy to have Denise here with me. I can't see her, but I believe that she is somewhere in the room. So good afternoon to everyone. It's really my pleasure to give an update on the tremendous work that has been done this year by the DC Bar Lawyer Assistance Program. We are really, the committee is just there to serve, to support their wonderful work. And I consider my job really to kind of be here to sing their praises and talk about what great work they're doing with, you know, some support from us, but mostly all on their own. So my day job is that I am the director of programming for the Institute for Wellbeing and Law. So I was a practicing lawyer for many years and then switched into an organizational kind of psychology education and role. So I really have the privilege of seeing firsthand the impact that lawyer assistance programs have across the profession, but particularly the great work that the DC Bar LAP in particular does. And I would say they are on the cutting edge, both of sort of clinical work and also from outreach and education work. This LAP in particular, I think, continues to play a critical role in supporting lawyers in all of the traditional ways they have in terms of substance use issues and mental health challenges, but also in being on the cutting edge of what is relevant to new generations of lawyers, including programs on neurodivergence and ADHD, and reaching out in different and novel ways beyond just sort of traditional clinical practice. And so, you know, while I'll touch on some of the highlights from the past year and from the report, I do also want to emphasize that the LAP's impact really goes beyond what's captured in the report. You know, the podcast series Towards Wellbeing, the Washington Lawyer column of the same name, right? And all of the education and outreach work, I don't remember the exact number, but I think that this year the LAP staff participated and presented over 50 different times in the community. And so, you know, I think these things really amplify the message. Certainly the committee provide support for that. And I think that the LAP does a great job of integrating volunteers and committee members into things like being guest speakers and on the podcast and being guest writers for the column. So there's, you know, there's a lot of ways that we work together, which is great. Let's see. So I can give sort of some, I mean, all of the details are in the report, and I'll really let Denise answer substantive questions about sort of the number of presentations, things, or the number of clinical visits this year and things like that. But, you know, I think it's also important to highlight some of the things like this, like the podcast, like the column, like some of the support groups that aren't necessarily highlighted as much in the report. So for example, the ADHD series, and I mentioned neurodivergence as a topic before, they had 89 participants in that over 6 weeks. And that is really, I will say, very unusual for this type of programming in my experience, and certainly what I see in my role. The feedback was really positive. So they've now established a monthly support group. I believe that program was nominated for a DC Bar, a very prestigious DC Bar award, because people were so overwhelmingly positive this year. Just a couple of highlights. There were 122 new client intakes, 834 individual client sessions, and then a facilitation of 76 support group meetings. Certainly, I think every member of the Lawyer Assistance Committee mostly feels proud to collaborate with LAP on presentations and other volunteer efforts, but I think more so we feel proud to just be associated with them and able to kind of spread the work that they do in the community. I think that, you know, just to name them, Denise Perme, Sharon Greenbaum, Jesse Joachim, and Nikki Irish, they are, I think, I feel that the Lawyer Assistance Program in the DC Bar is so lucky to have them as a director and as clinician. As you know, this is really more than just a program. It's really a unique kind of lifeline for the people that they support, and not only their professionalism but their personal strengths really stand out to me. I consider them really the best in their fields at what they do. And so I just wanted to kind of say that today. I don't have a lot else to add, but if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them or ask Denise.
I'm blushing, sorry. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Tara. Denise, do you have something to add to that?
Any questions? Oh, I know nothing. Thank you so much. And you're just so kind with all your words. It's been so wonderful working with you. I want to extend the committee and never let you go, actually. no, we have any questions about the report?
Denise, I have one question, and that is last year when you guys had, I think, a reception, I talked to somebody on staff about the, like, connecting the work to the voluntary bars. Do you guys, and I don't remember where that conversation went from there, but is there a way that you're reaching the voluntary bars as well, or they're reaching to you?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. So we attend the voluntary bar luncheons and do a presentation that just occurred, actually, I think in January. And then Nikki is the outreach and education coordinator. So she spends time reaching out to individual bar associations as well. And we go into some of their events throughout the year to try to target their individual groups. So yes, absolutely. Not all of them. I'd love to get to more, because there are so many, but we definitely do. And thank you. That was a good question. Thanks.
I'll just talk loudly, so don't worry about passing the mic. Do you feel you have enough resources to meet the needs of the lawyers who contact you? Like, is there a long wait for someone to meet with someone from your staff? Like, how do you Do you think you have enough?
Yeah, absolutely. No, there's not a long wait. When people call in or they usually email these days, we get them seeing that the within a day or two of their initial call. It really just depends on their schedule, but our schedule, we have enough clinicians that we can fit people in same week within a day or two. If they're super flexible, we can see them that day. We've like offered appointments that day or the day or the next day if they're flexible in their timing. Yeah. So no, we have, we're very fortunate to be given such good resources at the DC Bar. Yeah. So that is never a stressor that we are dealing with, luckily.
Also, I want to thank Denise. Thank you and your team, Carla, for coordinating with Pam and the communities folks as they get the new lawyer wellness community off the ground. They have all the vast experience and expertise that the new community is going to need. And so thank you for what you've done already and for what you guys will do.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. We're going to be connecting and helping with some presentations in the beginning as the community starts up. Yeah, we're excited about it. Thank you, Darren.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Happy holidays, everybody.
All right, Bob, we're going to move on to you to cover projects and furtherance of the strategic plan and update on my DC lawyer.
Okay, so I'm actually going to just mention this, and also we'll send it to you in materials. It's a 4 or 5 page PowerPoint. The strategic plan is the board's vision about where the bar and the pro bono center ought to be going. And this is the last year of a 5-year strategic plan. We do every year identify about a dozen or so projects that we are undertaking to operationalize the strategic plan. And we pick them in the beginning of the fiscal year, we report on them sort of along the way, and then we give you what we have done at the end of the year. These are projects that most of which you're generally familiar with. Some are technical because we have IT things that are going on as well. I'm not going to go through them all because I want to save a little bit of time and because we're running a little bit late for my DC lawyer. But take a look. And if you have any questions about any of those projects, just let me know. Most of them you will be familiar with already. All right. So thanks, Akhil. I'm going to go ahead and steal the screen, if that's okay. Hang on one sec. Get to the right one first and share, right? Okay, so as you know, in May, the bar launched its first lawyer referral service. There actually was one back in the 70s, but it was mostly focused on pro bono work and rather than actual paying clients. We are one of the last bars in the country to not have a lawyer referral service. And we took this opportunity to re-envision the way it was going to be and how it was going to operate. And we've discussed a little bit before the fact that the DC Bar's lawyer referral service is powered by artificial intelligence. It's an AI system. It launched in May. The front end of it launched, which is the subscribers, the lawyers, had the opportunity to sign up during license renewal. And we have about 750 or so lawyers who have signed up for this service. Since May 1st, we've been encouraging them with lots and lots of difficulty, honestly, to get their profiles entered into their system. And the way the system works is the participating lawyers will create a profile and they'll do a verbal description, a written description of their services, their expertise, the things that they do, the kinds of practice that they have. And then it goes into the system, and then we launch it to the front end, which is the potential clients. They do the same thing. They just write out, I have a problem. This is what the problem is. They don't need to know anything about the area of the law, the kind of lawyer. They just need to know that they've got a problem and they need some help. The system, it's a natural language-based AI system. It uses more than 1,000 vectors to match what the lawyer is able to do with what the client seems to need. And we tested this thing 1,000 different ways with a bunch of fake lawyer profiles and a bunch of scenarios that we made up, which were kind of a lot of fun to do. And the system had a fairly robust return rate. That is, it did a really good job about figuring out from what the client said, what kind of lawyer you need to match up with the lawyer who is most likely to be able to handle your matter. We have done, as you know, because we emailed you about it, a soft launch of the system, which we have named My DC Lawyer. We are in the process of doing the marketing and the branding and making it pretty and using actual subscribers' images in the marketing so that it really is a fully DC-based program. Since we launched just a few weeks ago, and again, it's a soft launch where we've done no advertising. You can find it on the website. You can actually go to my, as I'm about to in a second, go to mydclawyer.org and it'll direct you there. And about 200 people so far have gone ahead and done searches. It's been kind of an interesting little experiment to see what so far it looks like. The top five practice areas in which the attorneys fall based on their descriptions: business, small business, personal injury, intellectual property, labor and employment, wills, trusts, and estates, in that order. The five practice areas requested by clients. Now, this is where they have actually do have a chance to, if they think they know a practice area, they can put it in. That's not how the search is based. But this is just what they think that they need: labor and employment, family, other, civil rights, and real estate. So there's some overlap, but not a complete overlap. Yet there are matches in the overwhelming majority of the searches that are done at a fairly high level. The probability, the median, I think, is 72%, and which is great, which is totally great. So what I'd like to do is just take a minute and show you how it works. Okay. So it's mydclawyer.org. It's going to actually take you to the DC Bar's website, which you can, and you can find it this way as well. Little disclaimer. If you're, I have to move my pictures here. If you're ready, you go ahead and continue. All right, find an attorney. Now, the only required is your name, your phone number, and your email address. The system does not keep your client information. Once the match is made, off it goes. And we will emails you a list of the clients. So I was going to use myself here for real quick, but I guess I'll have to type it in. Oh, there we go. Let's see this one. Okay, so I'll use my own information. I'm not going to pick even an attorney that I need. I'm not going to pretend to know the business area. And then let's put in, yeah. I know it's a little sad, but my dad died 2 months ago. My brother and I are fighting over the house or horse.
And the horse, you might be fighting over the
bank,
horse.
Maybe, and bank account. Bank house. My dad died. Oh my gosh, thank you. See, you can't type under pressure. I need help. All right. So now you can also identify if you choose. This is only for statistical purposes, your race and ethnicity. You don't have to do it, your gender, your marital status, and the highest level of education completed. And we do that so that we can know where we're marketing to and how we can get to other people who are not yet connected to My DC Lawyer. The terms and conditions are here, which essentially say we're using an automated process. The attorney is not going to receive your information. You're going to receive the attorney's information. There's no guarantee that you're going to have a match. No one is required to represent you. We don't keep the description of your legal matter. It only saves the statistics for, and again, for our own internal purposes. If you retain a lawyer through the system, it's entirely your relationship. The DC Bar has got nothing to do with it. We don't create an attorney-client relationship. We're not affiliated with anybody in particular. We don't resolve disputes between you, and we're not responsible for the negligence of any attorneys who you engage. If you agree to that, click there, and you begin your search. And then it's going to return up to 7 lawyers. We originally had 10, but then like numbers 8, 9, and 10, depending on the search, they were getting a little bit further afield. Still relevant, but a little bit further afield. Okay, so these are folks who came up, and you can get their email address if you choose, but you can also see the profile. And this is information that they chose to include. Now, Ms. Henderson included her picture and her email address. Some people put their LinkedIn. So here, but it came up. I've been practicing probate law, distribution of assets, Sometimes it's complicated. So she has a fairly robust description and her contact information. So a potential client will look and say, oh, Ms. Henderson may work for me. Maybe I work downtown and her office is downtown. Maybe that's a convenient factor for her, for that person to know. But maybe they'll go on to number two and look at Mr. Frazier. All right, Mr. Frazier happens to be in Jacksonville, Florida, but is practicing DC law. But doing family law work and probate and estate planning. So matched, but kind of far afield. So maybe they say that's too far. I want somebody who's located in DC. So Mr. Beebe. Also, now here, Mr. Beebe included his own firm website, his LinkedIn page. He's in Gambrills, Maryland, but licensed in DC. And does state probate and estate work. So I'm not going to go through them all, of course, but the point of it being that the client then gets control of the decision-making process and gets seven lawyers. Now, maybe one of the seven will be right for them, maybe not, but it is an opportunity to be connected with people who are highly likely to have the skills necessary to deal with that legal matter. And again, the description that I put in didn't have the word will, didn't have probate, didn't have trust, didn't have estate, didn't have anything like that. It had dad died, house, bank account, right? Fighting. And the system yet understood what was going on. I was someplace and I did another demonstration. I asked somebody in the audience I was in a car accident, period. And every one of them was a personal injury lawyer. Right? Personal injury didn't come up, litigation didn't come up, none of that came up. But the system understood that that person needed a personal injury lawyer. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's up and running. We are kudos to Idem and Katarina and Ray and Monica who led the creation of this project. There was much time and effort to figure out how this thing was going to work. It has been fairly successful and very well received. So I presented this at the Mid-Atlantic Bar Conference, Southern Conference of Bar Presidents. Katarina did it at ILACE. We did it at the Voluntary Bar Leadership Meeting. Two bars have come to us, one state-level bar and one national bar, have come to us asking to partner either by them using our system for their lawyer referral service or licensing it to them. And we've already done one conversation, or we're going to have another one. Did you have the other one?
We did.
You did?
Right. What kind of license fees could you get for that?
Well, we don't know. We don't know yet. There's another factor that we have to work on as well, because many bars, we only take a subscription fee from the subscribing lawyer. We don't charge the client to do the search. Mm-hmm. We don't take a percentage of the recovery or the retain or the fee paid. Other bars do. The Santa Clara County Bar Association 2 years ago made $2 million from their lawyer referral service. They are this big. They are this big. So we have an ethics barrier at the moment on collecting a fee sharing in the District of Columbia. However, Delaware does not, and that's one of the bars that came to us. So the question is, could we actually participate on that side with a fee sharing agreement? And so there are many issues that need to sort of be worked out as we go through this. Also, obviously we have a partner in Apteria as the vendor that we worked with in doing this. And so we've got to figure out what that looks like. On the one hand, the state of Delaware only has 4,000 lawyers total, 3,000 of whom are a member of the Delaware State Bar Association, which is voluntary. So it's the vast majority. They're never going to pay Apteria the cost of a brand new system. So it's in everybody's interest to try to collaborate and work together. So, but you could easily see, you know, my DC lawyer, my DE lawyer. I mean, there could be a whole little cottage industry of this generating revenue for the DC bar, non-license fee revenue that will then help keep license fees down, which of course is what we're doing.
I'm sure the AI is still doing some learning, but on the subscriber end of it, I and a number of people I've talked to have not experienced the level of accuracy that you're talking about.
Well, a lot of it depends on what they put in the system. Like, I know I actually had someone go to you based on I know what they put in the system. And you actually come up fairly often in searches. And part of it,
I get a lot of emails that don't apply to me.
But part of it also is how the individual learner writes their description. So if you put in blocks of personal injury, will, like family law, da 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 da, the system may. And again, I'm not saying about your personal description, but it depends on how they write what they think they need. Also, if they start checking boxes in addition to what there is, the system may say, okay, well, you think you need a probate lawyer, you think you need a business lawyer. We'll give you names of all of them. And suddenly they start calling around, which is why you get the calls. But again, you come up very frequently because you have a variety of things in your portfolio that match with what the people are saying. Business comes up for you a fair amount. That's what it is.
I've gotten matched with people saying they're looking for family law, criminal law, civil rights, employment, none of which I do.
Yeah, and again, it may be because they've clicked off a bunch of things that have gone on, but most we'll figure.
Most have it all.
Yeah.
And I've talked to a couple of people that have some experience so far.
Well, it's good feedback, and we'll continue. We will go to the subscribers to see what their experience has been, and again, it's still brand new, and we're trying to figure out the best way to go ahead and make sure the right person is connected.
So does it come up with the same people if you put the exact same, like I need help with drafting a severance agreement. Will it come up with the same seven people? Nothing else has changed.
Yeah, I'll let Katarina answer that. Katarina, are you still on?
Yes, I'm here. Hello.
Okay.
Yes. So it will likely come to the same seven people. But the results are not 100%. It's not math, it's semantic. So it's not a mathematical result, it's more about the meaning. So it technically should be exactly the same seven, but there might be, especially in the lower matches, it might be one or two changes, but the top matches are very likely to be the same.
It's been interesting. We've had trouble getting, we only have 200 of the 750 lawyers who subscribed have completed their profiles.
Mm-hmm.
And we've done emails and phone calls. And we had membership calls. We did a video of how to do it. So it's been a bit of a challenge.
Do you have a question?
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Is it all currently only available in English?
No. You can. As a client, you can put in your language, and the system will go ahead and do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is pretty impressive, and I'm excited about the GC Bar possibly becoming the leader and the model for this nationwide. Very exciting. Here's my question. So, no doubt, you can extract a lot of process information, like how many people have looked for lawyers, but my question is the next step to plan for the ability to get impact data? How many, from the practitioners that, yes, my lawyer hired me, is there a plan for him to be able to measure impact?
So we, when the part of the term, terms of service for the subscribers is the willingness to be contacted by the bar for evaluation purposes. So we will reach out to them. Similarly, if we get complaint, we've prepared for the possibility we get a complaint from potential clients that I've called this lawyer five times, I've had five complaints about this particular lawyer who won't ever get back to me, and that's really helpful information for us to know to then reach out to the lawyer and say, look, we're happy keeping the system, but you really ought at least to acknowledge that they've contacted you. So,
Bob, going back to your stat about 758.
Yes.
200 have done the program.
Right.
How much are those?
They all paid $119, every one of them, to sign up now. And then when we launch publicly, like with the big full public launch, it goes to $179. So really, if you get one case during the course of one client during the course of the year, And you may, maybe if you just, if you charge your consultation fee, maybe it's one consultation, you've paid for the year's worth of service. No, one. It's an annual fee.
I feel like that's low.
It is low. But we also didn't know at the time. We had to figure out what the pricing was going to be. before the thing was even running, because we had to make it as part of license renewal, because we had to build it in order to generate that. And then we had to ask people on a wing and a prayer to sign up when the thing wasn't even fully operational yet, that we're going to do this, and then we're going to do this, and then we're going to market it to make a report, which is why we kept it really low. Because we thought if we can get people in the system and show them that it works, then they're more likely to. And indeed, like each time I go somewhere and talk about it, or there, anybody goes somewhere, we get a few more subscribers. And we think that after this year, when we get to license renewal in May, having publicly launched it, if you see it online, or maybe you see it in the courthouse, because both chief judges have agreed that we should put this out publicly in the courthouse. If you see it out there, you know, particularly for small firm solo practitioners, I mean, if you see it out there and you realize that people are using it, then you're more likely to subscribe. And at the moment, it's the best bargain in the world for them, particularly because we can't take any of your fees. But it was intentionally low. We're going to bump it up as we go through the public marketing phase, and then we'll see when we get to license renewal where we're going to be. We have until May to
figure out. I'll just add one thing. Based on the cost of the 500 that are done, be proactive. If they're thinking, oh, this is kind of negligible cost, I'm not going to take it seriously.
That may be one. They also may not be focused on the fact that it's actually up and running, which is why I think the marketing of showing it out there and that the members see that it's running, I think that may be part of it. Also, kind of like communities, we have these people who, we have members who, you know, the box is checked. They just pay and they're not really even paying attention to it. This is why you've got 1,500 super active communities members out of 15,000. So, I do think we're going to have a lot to learn this first year, a ton of learning to do about how the matching process is going, what the response rate is. I candidly, I'm really encouraged that we have done virtually nothing other than send you and the committee chair members emails about the system. And in the past couple of weeks, we have 200 searches, you know, whether or not they hit perfectly or whether they're, but the mere fact that people are starting to use it is a really good sign. We get calls every day. Dana gets called. I get calls. And that now I'm referring people to my DC lawyer, but I get calls probably 3 or 4 days a week looking for a lawyer. And that is why we skipped over the project.
Great. Well, thank you, Bob. That's huge. I remember, again, like the social workers, when this was being discussed very early on, and here we are with it up and running. It's amazing. And yes, if you want to have an entertaining 20 minutes, go stand by Dana and listen to his phone calls. Okay, so you were hit by what? I've done it. But thank you. Thank you for that. That's really amazing. And thank you to all of you who have helped market it and will continue to do so and participate in it. So with that, I think we will postpone the executive session to the January meeting, given that there's nothing necessarily timely right now that we need to go through and keep us on time. Our next meeting will be here on January 28th. Thank you all for everything you do for the meeting. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
Motion.
Is there a second? All in favor? Okay, we'll just take that. So on behalf of me and Bob's tie, happy holidays to everybody. Thank you all.
As many of you know, there's a suit that goes with us. I opted not to wear it.
And thank you, everybody online. Good to see you.
Oh,
it's a very dress. Entirely this color.
Yeah, I know, right?
Anthony.